Intertextual Cardboard Experience.
Hello and welcome to Intertextual Cardboard Experience, where I'm delighted to have a timely and tricky, not trickly timed, 27th guest, John Barron. How are you doing today, John?
I'm doing great.
Awesome. Yeah, I was trying to see if I could like trip myself up with a little bit of tongue twister to start, and I think I did okay, but nonetheless. but I have a treat of sorts, or at least I'm just saying that. But as I mentioned, timeliness of this conversation, but as I mentioned, timeliness is, for the conversation is perfect for many reasons, and one of them is that this episode gets to be the first ever Halloween Tricktacular, or very first Halloween special in general. But I thought it was fitting because Halloween's coming up, and because a couple of your big games are best candy on the block, so there's the connection. And then superheroes is quite Halloween-y too. And something that we'll talk about a little bit is your upcoming Kickstarter, and in that one, you have a game in there that's being designed by somebody else, Jeremy Zero, called Trick or Bid. So I feel with that long explanation out of the way, I'm very excited about this episode.
Yeah, me too.
But okay, so that's all exciting. The unfortunate thing here is that Dr. Tricky Time somehow infiltrated my brain. If you couldn't hear in that intro, the gears were spinning, and the timeline of this conversation has been manipulated. So we're going to have to work through these questions in an even more haphazard way than I typically do. All right.
Okay.
Okay. Preface part three, but that's like the outside of like hopefully getting some good questions in there. Prefaces and odd questions are my forte. But a fun note about this episode is that you're a back-to-back John. So my last episode was Jonathan Cox, and now it's you. But beyond that, in 27 episodes, I've had four Johns. Not all spelled the same, but still, four Johns in 27. And I technically, one and a half of my episodes were kind of like, or one and a half of my numbered episodes, because I have a few just kind of solo ones that I didn't number, or just me two. So the percentage is pretty high, but I'm not really like a math person. And the first question is about math. So
okay.
I think that, well, speaking of math, Tricky Time Crisis has an interesting card distribution. So do you want to explain that, you know, any part of the game, kind of like how you got to that and how kind of like difficult or tricky figuring out that math for the distribution was?
Yeah, sure. So in Tricky Time Crisis, the majority of the suits are heroes, and the distribution is a curve. So there's 1-3 and 1-9, and then there's 2-4s, 2-5s, 2-7s, and 2-8s, and then there's 3-6s. And the reason that I ended up doing it that way was because I was having extremely swingy games when I had the heroes. Originally, they were numbered 1 to 13. And what I found out was people would just keep, you know, their high cards for when they knew they were going to win, and there would be these blowout victories against the bad guy. And then as soon as somebody played a low card, like a 2 or a 3, everybody would start throwing away their ones. And I found it was just not that interesting a gameplay. And so I was trying to get the averages of the plays to be better. And I was like, how do I do this? And I thought about it for a long time. And then one day it just kind of came to me. I was like, well, what if I just curve the numbers? And then that would naturally curve the plays. And I tried it out and it actually worked. And I was really excited. And it felt weird because I was like, this isn't how a suit normally would be distributed, but it works. And so one thing that I like to tell people about designing games is like, you can break your own rules, and if it works for you, then you know, you got to go with it. So
Now that's awesome. How long were you testing it with that original distribution before you got to that the curve?
Oh, for a while. I would say I worked on this game for about a year, and I would say more than 6 months I worked with a regular distribution. I tried a lot of different things, and ultimately, like a lot of them didn't work out. I also had a priority system where I was like giving priority to different heroes so that to figure out how ties would work and stuff like that. And I ended up throwing all of that away because it was just adding extra stuff that didn't need to be in the game.
Yeah, no, that's really awesome. In yeah, I think like yeah, I don't know. We'll kind of talk about Tricky Time Crisis in a later question because as previously stated, we're all over the place with this one in terms of the way I'm setting up the questions. But in my limited play, I thought it was like a really neat game and yeah, like I. Yeah, no instance was it like what you said with that regular distribution where nothing was too obvious, you know, if it was just like a throwaway time, like that didn't happen. It's just every card and every play like mattered. And I'll kind of talk about that like a little bit with some of like my thoughts and my groups because they had a good time with that as well. But we'll get there. Again, Dr. Tricky Time is bouncing us all over the place. It's also a Halloween Tricktacular, so there's going to be a slew of random Halloween questions mixed in the middle of the questions. All right, next question then is, what is your favorite Halloween candy?
My favorite is Kit Kats. I like original, but I also like different flavored ones. Green tea. I like the random orange Kit Kats you can get only around Halloween. I guess they're white chocolate, but I'm not entirely sure what flavor they are. But I've always wanted to. I always figured if I went to Japan, then I would definitely like go around and try and find different flavored Kit Kats, because I know there's like a million different flavors of those out there.
Yeah, I would say that is probably in like a forum within the past like year or so that I my eyes were open to the idea that there are so many different Kit Kats out there. It's good Halloween candy. All right, now we're moving to what is kind of typically, well, now is one of my first questions. But what's a formative gaming memory that you remember that didn't necessarily make you fall in love with games, but or board games, but you're like, you know, this memory with gaming really stuck out to me.
Probably playing Uno with my grandmother. It was a game that we always played on vacation, so lots of good memories there. And it was like the game that I learned how to shuffle cards with. It was a counting game that my grandmother used to teach math with. And yeah, it was a game that we just played a lot when I was a kid. And also just sitting on my grandmother's lap, and when she was playing things like Pinochle with her friends and stuff like that. She said that I knew how to play it at one point, but I don't really remember how to now.
Oh, no, that's great. Yeah, I like that. I like you saying that kind of like reminded me both of my grandmothers definitely like games and you know one of them like super young. I don't know if people would call it a game, but the one that you'd call like shut a box where you literally just like roll dice and then flip the numbers down, but you can kind of pick how you distribute the dice.
Oh, yeah, I've
That
seen
one.
that.
Yeah. So I was like, you know, just a little kid chucking dice and flipping those down. And there's actually, well, a dog fight game that she had that on BGG. I like just looked it up like a half a year ago because I was talking to my dad, but I don't know which one. I think it's like Milton Bradley one. And then my other grandma and grandpa were definitely into like Sheepshead and other card games. So once I got old enough, I could play a little bit there too. But yeah, I guess that's, I hadn't really thought that both sides had some of that gaming background. That's really sweet.
Yeah, grandparents are great for getting you into gaming for some reason.
I hope to be the same in some hypothetical future. Awesome. Okay. We'll bounce back. We're now Halloween. What's a favorite childhood costume that you had?
One costume I remember doing was I was a mummy, and my mom works at a hospital, and she got all these ace bandages and just wrapped me head to toe in bandages. And that was always a costume that I remember doing. It was on a particularly cold Halloween. Like, you remember, like, Halloween used to be like so chilly. Back in the 80s, like it seemed like it was always freezing on Halloween. And it was like such a good costume because it kept me warm.
Did you rock the mummy like multiple years? Is that like, was that a go-to? Did you always want to be the mummy?
I think I did it like 2 years in a row, because we kept the bandages, and so that was like an easy thing to do. I think when I was in college, when I was in college 1 year, I also went as the Invisible Man. I just did my head and wore sunglasses.
I like that. Yeah, the only reason I ask is when I again young, I'm pretty sure I went like back to back years as a Power Ranger, and like I would have kept going, but my parents like, yeah, you just got to switch it up. Like you can't be a Power Ranger again. Like I was ready to go for the three in a row, and they're like.
You could just be a different color every year.
I could have been. I was red. I don't remember literally anything about that show, but I was red. Perfect. Okay. Ooh. So I was taking a look at the updates from the previous Tricky Time Crisis Kickstarter project, and there was a recent update that you posted there, and you mentioned that you were recently on a Dad's on a Map podcast episode talking about the upcoming Kickstarter. When I checked last before the time of us talking, like right now in time, that episode wasn't out, or at least wasn't like today when I was looking. So the setup here is kind of odd, but kind of like reflecting on that chat, like what you were talking about. What's something that you didn't talk about regarding that project that you want to bring up now?
Oh, that's a good one. Let's see. Now I have to remember what I talked about on that episode.
It's an ask from my point, but I'm not going to let you off easy, all right?
Okay. What did I not talk about? I think I did not talk about one of the things in the upcoming game that I haven't actually announced yet, but I'm announcing it on Tuesday, so it's coming up soon. But it's called Power Tricks, and it's based off of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. It's about like barbarians and stuff. And I don't think I mentioned that the way that I did the suits is based off of different weapons. So there's a sword suit and an axe suit and a hammer suit and a flail suit, which I was really excited with the artwork. Like they're supposed to be like these crazy magical weapons. And I think the art looks really good on them. So I'm really excited for people to see that next week.
That sounds really neat. And because, yeah, because I that like I said, that episode isn't out yet. One of the things that I mentioned above too was I think, unless I'm misremembering or misreading or both, which is always very likely possibility, but the aforementioned design, when I talked about Trick or Bid being designed by Jeremy Zero, this is like the first time that as publishing, your projects are working with another designer. Is that correct?
That is correct, and I'm very excited to do it. Jeremy Zero is he's been a friend on the Discord for a while. We chat with each other all the time, and we actually stayed at an Airbnb together when we went to Portland for PGC Con. And yeah, he's been shopping this game around for a little while. And he hadn't had any luck with the publishers. And one day I was talking to him, and I was like, "Oh, how did things go at the last con you went to?" And he said, "No one was interested." And I was like, "You know what?" I was like, "I really like this game. I'm really sad that it's not getting published." I was like, "What if I was to publish it?" And he thought about it for a while, and he got back to me eventually, and he was like, "Yeah, it was like this would be a good idea." So I never thought I was going to set out to publish other people's games, but I'm excited to do it. I think there's a lot of good games, especially when it comes to Discord. You know, a lot of people are always trying out different games, and they might not make it to a publisher ever for one reason or another. And I think that's a shame. So I want to start trying to get some of those published for people.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, yeah, I know. Well, I think, in regards to the kind of like PGC Discord and other ones that I'm probably less familiar. I'm not the most active in general, but I like to poke around and be there and like see what people are doing and posting and making and everything like that. I think that's super fun. But the community element, and like you said, people playing each other's games and like giving feedback and all of that, definitely adds layers to, like the hobby in general, and then kind of like, this trick taking, card playing, side of it. Well, that I don't know. I think makes it extremely special. So that's really cool that you were able to like play this game, love this game, and be like, yeah, let's make this a reality.
Yeah, so I'm excited. I feel like I probably made him wait longer than he really wanted to get to the point where we're doing the Kickstarter, but he's been patient, and so he's doing his own promotions for the game and everything. He's talking to people. He actually lives in Portland, so he's going around to game stores and stuff. So we got a great partnership going, and who knows, you know, if this works out well, then maybe I'll become a publisher and just grab other people's games and license them and publish other people's games.
That sounds great. I hope, I mean, it sounds like it's going to be something that, benefits all parties and makes like more people happy, gets more people's games out and more people playing games. So all thumbs up from me. That's fantastic. Oh man, we gotta jump back to random questions. So what is your favorite superhero and or superhero movie?
Oh, my favorite superhero is Green Lantern. Specifically, I was always a fan of Kyle Rayner. He was my Green Lantern. He became Green Lantern when I was in high school, and so he was like the Green Lantern I grew up on. And I was always a fan of like all the, wild stuff that he would make with his ring. And favorite superhero movie? That's a tough one. I would say probably Spider-Man 2 is a really good one. It's still like 20 years later, still one of the best superhero movies in my opinion.
Yeah, I actually revisited those, but now you're saying that I kind of want to watch it again.
Yeah, it just has a great arc for the hero. It has like great villains, it has great characters, he's got a great supporting cast. It's a really good movie. I think people don't talk about it much anymore because it's old. It's hard to think like it's 20 years old. Like that's crazy. But yeah, it's still a pretty good movie.
Well, yeah, not that the MCU is like in its peak or even close anymore, but it's definitely out of MCU canon, quote unquote. Well, I don't know. They tried to bring it back, but then, or at least the Spider multiple universes stuff. I don't know. Not
Yeah,
my
I'm a big fan of the Spider-Verse movies as well. Especially the new one because I was a 90s comic fan, and when they brought in Spider-Man 2099, I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited.
I watched the first one. I have not seen that one yet, but I've heard like nothing but good things, and when it came out, I was just kind of reading about the way that they did like some different animation techniques, and again, a million things out of the realm of my knowledge that like make any sense, but it sounded really cool. I'm like, all right, I definitely need to watch that,
Yeah, well,
so.
actually, speaking of Tricky Time Crisis, there's like I had like stills of pictures from the Across the Spider-Verse movie, and I was like, this is the kind of backgrounds that I want, and like I was like the like this is how like the dots work, and I talked about different kind of comic effects, and I was like, there's some really great examples of this in this movie. And like I shared a bunch of stuff with Sai, and at the time she was playing Marvel Snap, and so she was really into it. So she was very excited to make a comic book themed game, and yeah, so that was one of the reasons that the art looks so fantastic.
Yeah, well, yeah, I grabbed my copy. I made sure it's like right next to me. But that's funny that I had been playing Marvel Snap at that time, because I know I was, because they tried to like link the card releases to the movie releases, and I've mentioned this probably, well, now we're pushing a good handful of times, but I'd fall into games like Marvel Snap and binge myself to the point of just burnout, where I just try to play and play and play and play and play. But
Oh,
nonetheless,
yeah.
just despite the burnout, like I did enjoy my time playing Marvel Snap. But I've probably been Marvel Snap free for like a year.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I left it for a while, but I came back. I recently went back and started playing again, and they just celebrated their 2 year anniversary. So that was exciting. Before Marvel Snap, I was into there was a card game that was based off Plants vs. Zombies. And you could either every game was a plant deck versus a zombie deck. And so you would either build a zombie deck or a plant deck. And it was really cute. I haven't played that. Like I stopped playing that because of Marvel Snap. But I was really into that for a long time.
I think, well, I think in your this is not even like in my general realm of questions, but I like looking at your kind of like BGG bio and things like that. Definitely, a lot of people, not me though, you had a background in playing like Magic as one of the things that you like noted there. But yeah, my circuit was Hearthstone for a while. I actually like left that one and came back because like I burnt out and went back to that. Then I did Runeterra, which is like the League of Legends universe one, and then Snap was my most recent delve. But
Oh, yeah.
maybe I'll look into the Plants vs. Zombies one, or just find something new, or go back to Snap and then play
Yeah,
nothing.
I assume it still exists. I haven't looked into it in a long time.
That's funny. Good. Well, in kind of in your response about the art for Tricky Time Crisis, kind of hopped into my next question a little bit, which works out well because that means that it might mean that some of our timeline is being restored correctly or not going completely out of whack. We might defeat Dr. Tricky Time. We'll see. But I mentioned before that I did recently play it with Tricky Time Crisis with my wife and a couple that we're friends with. And, my wife has played a few Trick Takers, but I would say all the ones that we've played, she's maybe played like once or twice. So really hasn't kind of been able to like fall into the game and see some of the nuance, or just see how things like or strategies would develop from game to game. Just not a ton of time. And the our friends that we played with had never played a Trick Taker before, and it went over like really well. I think that the game provides a lot of like tough considerations behind like each decision, and that's kind of what I was talking about earlier. But I think that like the setting and the story, pardon me, and what some people call theme, some people wouldn't call theme, do a lot of work to help. So I've kind of got like a couple questions coming from that idea, and one of them is one that I'm taking from the table. So like when I was introducing the rules and talking about what you're trying to do and how the heroes are adding up their values against Dr. Tricky Time, so on and so forth, they were getting like a kick out of it. And here, let's see. So they were kind of wondering how you came up with the particular characters, the little story blurb in the rule book, and kind of like the general setting. Like, what was that particular process?
Some of them, the name came up first. Actually, I would say the majority of them, I came up with the name first, except for, yeah, Dr. Tricky Time was, that was because, I mean, a lot of trick-taking games, they start with tricky blank, or blank tricks and stuff, which, I had talked about it at one point, and I was like, well, if I'm going to make a trick-taking game, it has to have trick or tricky in the name. And when I was coming up with the idea of the game, I was like, well, you're trying not to have a paradox, because that's why everybody has to play a different suit, because otherwise it would be a paradox, because there's two versions of the same person. And I was like, oh, so they must be like trying to save time. And then also, like, that's just a funny pun. It's like we're trying to save time. And so I just came up with the idea of the bad guy was Dr. Tricky Time, and so I just went from there. The Daylight Saver, I was very excited about when I came up with that name. I was like literally bouncing off names with my friends. I was like, all right, if you had a superhero that was time themed, like what would it be? And so we were like talking about clocks, we were talking about sunlight and different things like that. And so when we came up with the Daylight Saver, I was like, oh, that's perfect. It seems like he would be the leader. And they were like, okay, well, he has to have a sidekick. And so the sidekick was like, all right, well, is he going to be like something lad or kid blank, or whatever. And so we came up with Kid Cuckoo because it was like, it's like Robin, it's based off of Bird. And Doc Talk was just, I was trying to come up with something with TikTok, and then I was like, oh, Doc Talk. And then I don't know how exactly I came up with the idea that Doc Talk would be a dog, other than I was a fan of the Superfriends when I was a kid. And one of the iterations, one of the less ser serious iterations, they had sidekicks who were like basically, it was like Shaggy and Scooby, but they were like fans of superheroes. And so I was like, well, obviously, like the superhero team needs a dog. And then I was like, well, what hero could be a dog? And I was like, well, I haven't really fleshed out Doc Talk. So what if he was a dog? And then somebody asked me, they were like, well, is he a dog that became like a superhero, or is he like a scientist that turned himself into a dog? And I was like, well, the thing is, he's not saying. So nobody really knows.
Hey, you get to allow each group to create their own story for that one.
Exactly.
Oh, I like that quite a bit. So yeah, kind of like, well, actually no, I lied. I'm gonna just hit you with a follow-up question before getting to my like initial follow-up question, and this is not related to games, but is related to what you said, kind of. So in general, your hot take, are you for or against the general idea of daylight savings?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say overall, I get confused. Like, is daylight savings, is that the one where we're in the summer, or is that in winter?
We'll do some. I do get confused too, because I guess the thing, it does say that daylight saving time ends on November 3rd. So I think we are in, we're in
Okay,
daylight
so we're
saving.
currently in daylight savings time.
But I guess the flip side, unless I'm mistaken, so if daylight savings got rid, if we didn't make that change at all, it would just be, we'd be in like the darker daylight period all the time, though.
I kind of like the daylight savings time, but only like I feel like it almost should just be all year round. Like, I feel like they shouldn't switch it back.
Yes. So not getting rid of daylight saving, but getting rid of when they get rid of daylight saving.
Yeah, just make our entire time zone just go ahead an hour. I always thought that days should like start at sunrise. So like instead of like 12 p.m. or 12 a.m. being in the middle of the night, I think it should be like around like 6 a.m. so that like the day is like literally starting when the sun rises. The other interesting thing I know about, like, this is tangentially related to daylight savings time, but did you know that in China they only have one time zone for the entire country? But since the country is so long, that means that basically the sun rises like at approximately kind of a normal time if you're in like Hong Kong. But if you go way out to the west of the country, the sun is rising at like at something like 12 or 1 p.m.
I feel like that is something that I should have known, but that's wild. I mean, yeah, like you said, China's huge.
Yeah, it's a very long country, so it's wild that they just were like, you know what? This is just the time it is for our entire country.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I live in, Wisconsin, and then I mean, just thinking about traveling to, like the western part of the state, and it, whatever, being lighter, longer within like a couple hundred miles, let alone like the entire length of a country. Huh. That's funny. Okay. Well, overall, your feelings towards daylight saving time, I think I can be on board with those too. That's probably where I was at before, and I agree. Okay, so the actual follow-up to that idea that I kind of prefaced before getting into well, that previous question about like the character and how you came up with that, or the characters and setting and all that, was going off some of those ideas that I think, people do dismiss of some of what I'd call kind of like, character of trick-taking games or card games, just writing them off as just that, as like dressing, I guess. But I also understand that, like, within the scope and frame of the way that like a trick-taking game or like a traditional card game might play, that there is only so much that one can do to inject that character or flavor. But then back on the other hand, I do think that like any sort of effort or like the general effort is still important and can have like a profound impact on the game. So for you, like especially creating card games, like how do you approach thinking about, setting, character, or what some people would call like kind of like theme into your design and in what is kind of like a limited like space to do so?
I have come to card games both ways. I prefer to be theme first rather than mechanic first. I like to have mechanics that make sense with the theme rather than having a theme that makes sense with the mechanics. That's not to say that I never design mechanic first. I definitely, one of the upcoming games, Tip of the Diceberg, which is a climbing game. That has polyhedral dice. It's called Tip of the Diceberg, and there's a reason being is that you only get to see the surface level of it because there's all these other cards related to it. Because instead of having normal melds, there's a whole deck worth of melds. So every time you play, there's different cards and different things you can do. So that's what the theme comes from, but it's. Not like a strong theme, it's just like yeah, that kind of makes sense, but it's also like if you stripped away that theme, the game would not suffer at all. With Tricky Time Crisis, if you stripped away the theme, the game would not be quite as fun, I don't think. And so I prefer games like that. I prefer games that like are more theme forward. And so I was doing an exercise just for fun where I would talk about like, well, if you could have an intellectual property, like they would license whatever you want, what would you make a card game out of and how would you do it? And so that was how I started playing around with different ideas. And one of the ideas was like, if I could have He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, how would I implement that as a card game? And that's how I came up with Power Tricks, because I was like, okay, well, what's the thing that stands out? And for me, it's like when he grabs a sword and he says, I have the power, right? And so I was like, how can I work that into the game? And I came up with an idea that I thought really worked well, and then I built the game around that. And then it became all about like, okay, well, this is like a savage fantasy kind of thing. And that's where the artwork came from. And then I wanted to have like kind of like questing involved and stuff like that. So I kind of worked that into the game as well. And so you can, if you want to, you can play through chapters and the game rules change a little bit. And like there's a whole story about like, finding the weapons of power and stuff like that. And so that was one of the things that I was working on with that. I've played around with a Scooby-Doo game. I've played around with a Pokemon game. The Pokemon game was really complicated. and I so far those are the only ones that I've like got any headway on, but if anybody ever has an idea of oh, my favorite TV show or my favorite movie is blank, can you make a trick-taking game out of that? I will always try and take the challenge and be like, all right, how could we make this into a trick-taking game? And if I can think of something, I will definitely I will come up with it and flesh it out as much as I can.
Yeah, again, I think that's a really interesting approach, and like part of like my thoughts or like wording the question was stating that things kind of like do potentially feel like a limited or a bit limited because a deck of cards or whatever you're not, and the art, I mean, art is going to help in all those different things, but I like your thought exercise of just like picking a show or having something being told to you or coming to you and saying like, yeah, what would like how could you capture like this essence or like this arc or this story within like that play? I don't know.
Yeah,
That's
the big thing is getting that feel. What does this boil down to? What makes this unique? What makes this theme unique that if I can somehow connect it to a mechanic, people will go, "Oh, yeah, that makes sense." Like when you're explaining the game, they go, "Okay, yeah."
okay, so unplanned follow-up to that thought. If speaking of like like licensing, if you were to like have the opportunity of one of these intellectual properties wanting you to design a card game based on that like IP, which one do you think it would be like right now?
Oh, I would love to get Scooby-Doo. That's just so much nostalgia for that. And I'd want all the Scooby-Doo characters. I want the characters from the 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo. I want the characters from the original series. If possible, I want the Harlem Globetrotters. I want to have the Harlem Globetrotters in my game.
How big is this game going to be?
Oh, they'd just be on one card,
Oh,
but
okay.
it's but it would just be fun to just be like, yeah, I play the Harlem
All
Globetrotters.
right. Well, unfortunately, I do not have any connections that can help you out. But if somehow I stumble across somebody, I'll you'll be the first person I let know, all right?
Yeah. I mean, there's a Lord of the Rings trick-taking game coming out, so you never know.
Yeah, no, there's and way back, just kind of like a funny one, like when I talked to Taylor probably, well, like a little over a year ago now, we kind of like touched on this idea of like kind of like theme and IPs and card games and that, and I was struggling to come up with it at the time, but there was that like American Psycho trick-taking game too, and
Oh,
we
yeah.
kind of chatted about that a little bit. But yeah, hey, in a world where anything can exist, I'm definitely not saying that this couldn't exist. I just can't help you. That's it.
I really wonder how the American Psycho game came to be. Who got the license to American Psycho and was like, you know what? This is a trick-taking game.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, doing like that thought experiment, like if I were to have to design like an American Psycho game, I don't even know what type of game it would be, but it would definitely just be a game about business cards. Like
That's got to be a major part of it, yeah.
that'd be most of it. Or, oh man, it's been a long time since I've seen that movie, but music and business cards, I guess, but we'll see. I'll see who they reached out to for that licensing and come up with like a really stupid game too. But perfect. Oh, speaking of movies, this segues well. We're we're meandering, but what is your favorite scary movie and or movie that you like watching around like Halloween?
Oh, that's a good question. I do like watching I do like watching older slasher movies. They're a little bit more quaint nowadays. I definitely was afraid of them as a kid, but the original Halloween or maybe the first Friday the 13th. Things that it's a little gory but not too bad. Before they got into the crazy goriness of the 1980s, with a I always think of Nightmare on Elm Street as being really really scary. That was a movie that probably scarred me as a kid. I saw that way too young. But yeah, I would say Halloween, Friday the 13th are ones that I usually watch this time of year.
I cannot handle like hardly any horror or anything like that, but I'll see if I don't know if I can find something that's kind of like a little campy. Maybe that'll be like my Halloween go-to. I wanna get into the spirit, hence the Halloween Tricktacular that we are in the middle of right now. So
Well, there's always the Nightmare Before Christmas.
yep.
It's a little more kid friendly.
Yeah, and I guess I'd say anything that's not like overly gory or scary or dark, I can handle. So like anything lighter, I'll hop on that. That'll be my new Halloween thing.
Or just go back to a classic B movie from the 60s or something like that. Watch a black and white one, and what's the one where it's a Roman, he's a instead of a human, he's a Roman because he's half robot, and it's a guy in a gorilla suit that has a space helmet on.
Roman.
I think it's called Roman.
I Roman it, like robot monster tells the story of alien robot Roman's mission to Earth to destroy humanity. Is that
Oh, apparently it's called Robot Monster. Yeah.
okay?
It's
Moon
from
monsters
1953.
launch attack against Earth. 3D. Maybe I'll watch things that people once thought were scary before technology was really a thing. And then I'll be like, yeah, I can handle this.
Also, whenever you watch a horror movie from the 1950s, you have to figure out how it's trying to talk about communism.
I don't know if my brain is tuned to that, but I'll do what I can.
What are the secret messages about communism in this movie?
I mean, I don't know. That's gonna like just send me down a path of time thought and just thinking about like how the 50s were not that long ago. Obviously, I wasn't alive, but yeah, it was not that long ago. Wild, wild. We're Dr. Tricky Time is trying to pull me back into his grasp. Let's stay away. Okay, I kind of have like just one question before getting into like my couple of like wrap up thoughts for you. And I technically didn't even like kind of write this or think of this as a question. I mean, I did later just so I could chew on it a little bit more. But the kind of thought here is on like proxy decks. So I know that you design like different decks. So to proxy, I have one of them.
Oh, great.
And yeah, I don't know which one it was because I've seen you've done a few, but afterwards I'll pull it out because it's behind me. rifling through will not be good for any audience. Just me rambling is instead. But I think, I mean, well, technically people could be just buying like proxy type of decks solely for the sake of, you know, like design, like trying to like make their own design. But I know that people do proxy games too, and like having a bigger selection of cards would make that easier, and all that. But kind of that idea of like proxying games, for my more outsider looking into conversations, I don't really inject thoughts or necessarily, well, I do have thoughts. That's not a true statement. Still more outsider. Like, how do you kind of like view some of the pros and cons of the idea of like proxied games?
I think the big pros are that it can allow you to play a game that you don't have access to. You know, some of the games that are big in the hobby, you know, are just like unobtainable. It's getting better now. I mean, there's been a lot of reprints recently, and I know like some of the hardest to find games are getting reprints this year and next year, which is very exciting. You know, things like My Favorite Carrara, Man Eating House, which once upon a time were just impossible to find. And even now, like Shut the Books, I think it's pretty rare. And that's pretty easy to proxy because it's just number cards. It's great when you can proxy a deck and play it and find out like what is this game like? I've been hearing about this. I don't think like it affects sales all that much personally, because I think the vast majority of people, given the chance, would rather buy an actual copy of a game rather than just like be like, well, I have this proxy deck, so I never need to buy this copy of the game. Some people probably are like that, but they would be like that anyway. They would have like a deck of playing cards and being like, this is all the trick-taking games I need. So giving them like some extra cards that don't exist in a regular poker deck, like is not like a huge disadvantage to like the sales of overall, I don't think. So yeah, when I was making my proxy decks, I was trying to go for what was the most common cards that you would need, and what are the cards that you might be missing. Big ones were, you know, having zeros, going all the way fi to 15 in suits, throwing in some negative numbers for some of the rarer games. And yeah, overall, just trying to be like a generally good proxy suit, proxy deck. That was what I was trying for. I could add in more crazy cards for sure, you know, like you know, I think it depends on what you're looking for. Like if you win a lot of face cards, then you might want to go with like the Badger deck, because like every suit they have 10 face cards, which is a lot. But what I found when I was using the Badger deck to proxy things was I had all these face cards that I wasn't really using. Like, yeah, the artwork is amazing, and like the idea of them is fun. Like, okay, like there's a princess card and there's a sorceress card and there's a monster card, but it's like, what do I actually do with these cards? I don't actually have games that I need them for, you know. So for me, it was like these are kind of superfluous, and like I'm just paying for these cards that I'm really not going to use in any games. So
Yeah, I think like all those thoughts make a ton of sense. I actually kind of, I mean, I bought that the deck more for the sake of like just kind of tinkering around with like design, more in the design space, and like being able to have access to all those different cards is cool. Except like the first game I was like playing around with, it was suit, it's suit based, but not value based, so like having the values in the card was just like breaking my brain, so I just made different cards, but that's a different story. But yeah, no, I think, yeah, your sentiments match what I was kind of like where I had been at too, because, you know, like say if somebody was going to proxy like Tricky Time Crisis, like, yeah, first off, it might be nice to like get that exposure, but if I were like in that instance of teaching, you know, like the three people that I played with, like them all playing that game for the first time, and I tried to introduce them through like a proxy deck, and they have like a like spades, be like, all right, this is Dr. Tricky Time. They're like, wait, what? You know, being able to use like the art and the setting and the story made that experience like so much easier to like relate and work through for that first time. And maybe if it was like with a group that was like more experienced, like that the proxy could have like worked and then been like, oh, this is like a cool design, and then like wanting to, you know, then go buy it based on the fact that like the art and everything else is gonna add to it. But yeah, that's I think that's kind of like where you were at, and that's kind of like what I've been thinking too.
Yeah, it is also great for designing because like sometimes you're just like, I just need a bunch of cards that have the same back, and I just want to throw them together and make a deck that I've been thinking about and see if it works. So yeah, playtesting is also a major reason to get proxy decks, and I've used my own for playtesting, so I can completely understand using them for that.
Yeah, I'm super happy that I have it. It's just a cool deck in general with like a lot of fun cards, so I'm glad that I own it.
Awesome.
Okay, my general kind of like penultimate question is about like a text that's been on your mind. So this could be anything that you've been playing, watching, reading, listening to, like anything that you've been consuming that has been like stuck on your mind.
I've been watching Only Murders in the Building. And which is actually this season is somewhat related to trick taking because they keep talking about the game Oh Hell, which is kind of fun. But yeah, it's a murder mystery TV show. It's in its fourth season right now, and there's been yet another murder which they're trying to solve. How does it keep happening? Nobody knows. So it's a comedy, and it has Martin Short and Steve Martin in it, and they're both hilarious, so they're fun to watch. Yeah, I've been thinking about that a lot lately.
Nice. I know probably like last year, around this time, I remember my sister had mentioned that she was watching it, and somebody else just brought that up recently too. So it's on a lot of people's minds.
Yeah.
Okay. So then the wrap up question that I have, kind of like touching back on a couple things, your Kickstarter for four games is coming up soon. The Golden Tricksters is up on BoardGameGeek right now. So if you played Tricky Time Crisis and you're like, wow, that's a cool game, and you want to give it some accolades, you can go on. I'll make sure that link exists and vote for that one. I think you can vote for up to three. So take a look at all the really neat games that are there and show your love. But I guess the question then is, well, first off, is there kind of like anything else that you want people to look out for from you, or is there anything else that you want to add on or like touch regarding the upcoming Kickstarter?
Nothing else. Yeah, I will say that it's great if you give me a vote for Golden Trickster of the Year. And yeah, there's a lot of great games that came out last year, so I can completely understand if you vote for somebody else. And My Kickstarter will be starting on Tuesday, the 29th of October, which is coming up soon. It might already have happened if depending on when you're listening to this. And yeah, so those are the two big things. And then presuming that this Kickstarter goes well, I'll have more Kickstarters in the future for even more games, which will be really exciting. I'm talking to some great creators at the moment, and nothing is final, but if I get some of the games that I'm talking to people about, I'll be really excited to bring them to you.
That sounds absolutely fantastic. I don't know why I was thinking about this, but like it is funny when I do ask the kind of this question now, like things to look out for you. It's like, oh, like you've got a Kickstarter coming out with like four games. Anything else going on?
Isn't this enough for you?
But I mean, again, it's kind of like an interesting thing to think about too, as an independent, designer and publisher and yourself, where like it's you. I mean, you were working with Jeremy regarding that one project. You're working on all of your games and doing like every single like step to make that happen and coordinating all of that. Whereas, like sometimes, like a designer who might be doing some independent work and or is contracted out, like they could have like done work for a game that's coming out in like 2 or 3 years, and they still can't even like talk about it. So it is a very interesting way that that question can manifest depending on like the context of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, in this context, be like, yeah, again, the you got a whole bunch of things that are coming out. So hopefully everyone who is listening to this episode is listening in time to be able to go check out that project on Kickstarter. But very awesome. And then, like you said, nothing necessarily set for those other things, but that all those prospects seem extremely exciting too. But I think we have like set the timeline right. My brain was only slightly scrambled, probably more so at the beginning when I couldn't say like that first sentence to my intro. I was just like, bleh. But we're all set. We have made it to the other side, and all is restored. So thank you so much for your time with me and the show. I had an absolute blast.
Thanks for having me.
Intertextual Cardboard Experience, the most timeline-threatened podcast about board games and any other text that they connect to. Thank you so much for choosing to spend your time here. Any further support, such as sharing the show with friends, following the page's socials in the episode description, writing a review, filling out the feedback form, or doing anything else you can think of is greatly appreciated. Keep playing, watching, reading, listening, experiencing.